97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show on a Thursday morning. Happy you are with us this morning. And, you know, guess what I just found out? And I was thrilled to find this out. I did not know this. Do you know what's happening in the state of Missouri today? Kim St. Ange?
Nope.
You'd have to be a nerd like me to... policy nerd like me to be excited about this.
I thought you were going to say something then related to Sammy Hagar, but no,
that wouldn't be related
to some policy.
I would love it if he was coming to Missouri this week, but I think he's done touring for a while. I think I'm going to have to go to Las Vegas to see him.
Bummer.
It is a bummer. It's a complete bummer. This is happening right now today in the state of Missouri. They're hosting a nuclear power summit as policies shift away from wind and solar projects. Can we have a round of applause for that? I mean, I think that is absolutely fantastic news. Long overdue. And you're like, Mark, why are you so excited about that? Because it's the obvious answer. All of these numbskulls complaining about coal, burning coal, and the damage to the environment and blah, 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 even though it's the cleanest it's ever been in the history of the world, burning coal. We don't pollute anything like they do in China, where they're putting one of these online a month, it seems like. And they want to keep putting restrictions on Ameren's plants out on the river. You know, Missouri is behind Texas as the leading state in the country still using coal is its primary source of energy.
I had no idea.
We are. So anyway, this is great news. Nuclear energy is clean. It is very safe these days. And, you know, you drive past that Callaway plant. Every time you go out 70 or down to the lake, you see it out there. And there's no reason why there shouldn't be more of those. There just really isn't. And well, there's one reason. The political winds have changed, so to speak, and a little weather term for you there, and you don't have to pretend like it's okay to depend on solar and wind, because sometimes the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine, as they found out in Texas during several recent weather emergencies, just so you know. All right. Glad you're with us. We got Jim Talent coming up, former Missouri senator here. Dave Marshak, the Jefferson County Sheriff, is going to join us because a group of sheriffs from across the state got together this week and announced a new policy initiative to protect the Second Amendment. I'm not sure what all that means, but we're going to get the Sheriff Marshak on here and talk a little bit more about that for you at about 7:35. We'll get to Kim on a whim next hour. Shannon Bream is going to join us from host of Fox News Sunday. And of course, not much going on in Washington to talk about these days of any note, right? All right, right now, Ethan, let's get to our top stories.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
I think a lot of people just need to get to know folks before they issue an endorsement.
Don't you think so? Don't you think if you just knew your fellow communist a little better, you would understand them and start to embrace their policies, said no one ever, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Was Joe Biden fit to exercise the duties of the president? He pled the fifth. Second question, did any unelected official or family member execute the duties of the presidency? And this is Joe Biden's chief of staff.
Yeah, fair questions from James Comer, and the guy, you know, was Joe Biden fit to carry out the duties of the president? I plead the fifth. That's to keep you from incriminating yourself because you know he was asleep at the wheel.
Trump has those kind of voters. They are dedicated to him personally. They care more about him being happy than them being happy. They care more about him having what he wants than them having what they want. They will give up their health care. They will let their daughters be destroyed. They will let their families be destroyed. There's nothing he can do.
Why am I listening to her voice would be my question. Didn't she get fired from MSDNC? That was Joy Reid. There's very little joy in Joy Reid's life. She can't stand how successful Trump has been for the first 6 months of his administration. And it sounds like maybe we need to call in the crisis counselors. All right, that's my
had a policy, which is, by the way, I think the biggest scandal That's the scandal they should be talking about, not Jeffrey Epstein. The scandal you should be talking about is the auto pen, because I think it's the biggest scandal, one of them in American history.
Yep, that was President Trump yesterday. Part of his comments on Jeffrey Epstein and the auto pen. He seems very frustrated, doesn't he? That people still are still talking about the Epstein thing. I don't think it goes away anytime soon. We talked about it last hour with Matt Locke, who's of course a podcast for the Working Man podcast is his podcast. And you know, we were talking about the young people, the younger generations, and maybe what they think about all this. I don't know, Kim. Is it a generational thing? I have watched the people, the big the richest people, let's face it, in the world, who have the power and the money to get away with things for a long time. In the Epstein's case, everybody thought, wow, well, he's alive, or they're going to go to trial, we're finally going to find out who all was at his island, and the next thing you know, whammo, he's dead, and nobody seems to know anything. And since then, we've had a lot of questions, and without any real hope of finding out any answers, because if you follow the timeline here, the Jeffrey Epstein case first happened when George W. Bush was still president, before Obama took over, right on the cusp of when Obama was coming into office. And then nothing happened during the Obama administration with any list. Nothing happened during the first Trump administration with any list. Nothing happened during the Biden administration with any names on that. It's been a long time. This has been going on for a long time. And you finally had a glimmer of hope that you just might be able to get a little bit of truth out of this. And then we get the rug pulled out from under us.
Yeah, I could believe this idea that he killed himself, because if he were to go on trial and something were to come out that he exposed some of these big names that were doing some of these things, he would probably be killed at that point. So I can just let that thing go of, was he murdered or did he kill himself? I can just say, yeah, he probably killed himself. The list is where I'm stuck. And I think Trump talked about, during the campaign, he talked about releasing these. He talked about releasing the JFK files. He talked about releasing the Epstein client list. And so he is a man of his word, and he's proven that time and again, right? Promises made, promises kept. And so for some reason now, all of a sudden, we're expected to just be fine with him not doing this and him basically criticizing us for still having a vested interest in this.
Let's face it, all of those have turned out to be a disappointment. All of those things that you thought there was something there, the JFK files, the Area 51. I mean, I still would love to know more about that, but it's not ended up being really much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think this dies anytime soon. This is the president's comments that's getting the most attention from yesterday. Go to cut 17.
In your two sets this morning, you mentioned past supporters when you were talking about the Epstein issue. Does that mean that you're effectively disowning any supporters who are now calling?
I lost a lot of faith in certain people, I lost. Because they got duped by the Democrats. The Democrats are good for nothing. They've done a terrible job. They almost destroyed our country.
He's blaming it on the Democrats. And, you know, I don't know. I think what his suggestion here is that the Democrats destroyed some of the evidence or mishandled it on the whole thing. Like, you know who was in charge of that trial when it was about to happen, when it was still about to happen?
Mm-mm.
Maura Comey.
Oh, yeah.
James Comey's daughter, who also handled the P. Diddy trial.
Just got fired, right?
She just got fired. And you could argue that between those two, there was enough evidence of incompetence that she probably deserved to be fired. The state did a horrible job, apparently, of presenting its case against Diddy, despite all of the evidence that they had.
I'm shocked that he was let off from those bigger charges.
Me too. Me too. I mean, I don't know if that played into her getting fired. I guess that it did. But she also played a role in the whole Epstein thing. Yeah, there are definitely some powerful folks out there who would prefer those names not be released. I think the president's going to have to cut bait here at some point and release some of it anyway. I don't think that goes away. Coming up, we'll talk to Jim Talent, see what he thinks about the whole thing. We'll get his thoughts on it. Dave Marshak at the bottom of the hour. And next hour, Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday. We'll find out what she's got on the lineup coming up for this weekend and ask her a little bit about that most recent Supreme Court decision allowing President Trump to basically gut the Department of Education. It's all coming up on the Mark Cox Morning Show.
NPR and PBS are not neutral media outlets. They are the closest thing we've ever had in this country to Pravda. They are the arms of the left-wing activist class, taxpayer-funded platforms for political propaganda masquerading as journalism.
All right, Jim Talent, former Missouri senator, joining us right now. Jim, welcome back to the show, my friend. How are you?
I'm fine, Mark, and thank you. Always good to be with you.
It is great to have you on. We appreciate your time every week. The rescissions bill got through the Senate. Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins did not fail to disappoint, but they got it through, and now we have $9 billion in savings, including things like cutting funding for PBS. What do you think about what Eric Schmidt said there?
Well, he's right. I voted for that 30 years ago when there was actually a much stronger case for keeping NPR just because of the nature of the business, in the sense that, you know, there weren't anywhere near as many outlets. And since then, they've also become the cheerleader for every progressive cause. I mean, no matter how weird, and they don't allow dissenting or critical voices either. So what he said is correct. It's essentially a propaganda outlet funded by taxpayer dollars. So it needs to go for several, or the funding needs to go for several reasons. If they want to become or be MSNBC, they can get funded privately the way MSNBC is funded. So they're going to do that. It's long overdue.
Yeah, I wonder when I look at the funding issue. You know, I remember Air America was the big supposedly left-leaning radio network that failed pretty miserably because they didn't get the kind of commercial support they thought they would get around the country. And I always argue that's because nobody needed to hear that because they could just watch the mainstream news media. They didn't need that perspective necessarily on a daily basis. Do you think they can? Do you think NPR, PBS, your local NPR station in St. Louis, can exist if they've got to go out and generate their own revenue?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same question you could ask of any media outlet. I mean, in other words, can you get enough support? Now, you know the business better than I do, but you can occupy niches in. I don't know whether to call it journalism or not. I mean, I've been on the local station on a number of times over the years. You have to occupy a niche that you have a big enough group of listeners who want to hear. And I think they can, but they're going to have to do it now the way everybody has to do it. And that's the better way. And then the broader issue, Mark, is, I'm sorry, we're not going to reduce this deficit unless we start setting some priorities about what's important and what isn't. And so we have a bill here that looks at foreign aid. It takes, I think, what is it, $8 or $9 billion of it and says, you know, it's not really producing anything on behalf of America's interests, which foreign aid should do. And so we're going to reduce that. And I expect we'll see other measures along the line as well. I mean, Speaker Johnson's been talking about it. I think we'll probably see other rescission measures down the road.
Yeah.
Well, I know one of the, and you kind of just brought this up, but one of the sticking points for a lot of people who are against this rescissions bill is the funding for USAID. But when you hear about some of these programs that it was funding, like what was like drag shows in some foreign countries, I can't even wrap my brain around the fact that somebody signed off on that to fund it in the first place.
It's gotten pretty extreme in a lot of ways. We need to look again. We need to really do a thorough review of how we engage with other countries around the world on these kinds of issues in a way that advances the interests of the American people. And, the president is doing that. And remember, he went to the Middle East and secured a lot of investment in the United States. Those are the kind of ties economically that bind us or gain us credibility with other countries. so that we can partner with them on broader security issues. But USAID has not been doing the job, and so they're losing some money. I mean, you know, all of us in the private sector understand if you don't accomplish the mission you're supposed to accomplish, you know, you're not going to get funded. You're not going to get customers. You're not going to get investment. And that's what's happened with USAID.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't think of many Americans. I can't imagine many Americans are sad that we're saving that amount of money, although they poo-pooed it saying it's less than 1/10 of 1% of the federal budget. So why did you need to cut that? Well, I mean, you could make that argument. Why would you ever save money then? Anywhere you would, right. You can save money, you should.
And in fact, the opposite is true. In other words, if we're going to get the debt under control, eventually, and there is some discussion of this now, we're going to have to bend the cost curve, for example, of Social Security down. Now, it's going to continue to go up in spending, but not by as much. And if you're going to ask the American people to make sacrifices along those lines, you have to have done everything you can do in the discretionary budget. That's what this is here. In other words, you have to eliminate all the waste you can eliminate, obviously all the fraud. And then you can go to the American people and say, look, we have disciplined spending on things like this. If you're spending billions of dollars to build electric mail trucks or charging stations, and you don't produce any trucks or charging stations, and then you go to the American people and say, now, look, we want you to trust us in Social Security, how are they going to respond?
Yeah.
And so I think this sort of thing is absolutely essential. I thought it when they were doing the big, beautiful bill. Made some reductions there, and I think you're going to see more along those lines. I think the American people will support it, especially on. I mean, this is the beginning of this sort of thing, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Well, I wish I didn't have to utter the name Jeffrey Epstein ever again, but for well over a week now, it seems that that's kind of dominated a lot of the conversation, and the president just wants the whole issue to go away. Do you think that's going to happen?
Well, I think eventually, and it's not an issue I've followed as closely as I'm sure some of your listeners have. You know what? I'll say two things about this. I think they can be true at the same time, and they are true at the same time. There's a whole lot of smoke with Jeffrey Epstein. A lot of questions that I ask myself: have they really been resolved? In particular, regarding how he died. You know, now they released a video. But the timing of that sure was suspicious. So I understand people being concerned. Now, on the other hand, there's been a prosecution in connection with this. There's been class action lawsuits against Epstein and his estate and against the banks. There is a lot of material that's been revealed. And I don't, you know, I do trust that. I think the administration has earned our trust when they say, look, we prosecuted everybody we can prosecute with this. And if that's the case, then people should ask themselves, do we really want files revealed with a whole lot of names in it that of people who haven't done anything wrong, but whose reputation will be, you know, will be hurt by this? Yeah. Remember the old Dragnet show, Mark, at the end?
Sure.
They would say, the story you've just seen is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. We do have to be careful with investigatory material, because they'll ask questions of everybody about everybody. If you've worked for a big company or a big union or a big organization and they've ever been investigated by the government, you know, the odds are that somewhere in those files your name is mentioned, okay? And that doesn't mean you did anything wrong. So, I think President's probably right. I think this will be resolved as a big issue, but I understand people's concerns.
It's a good point. Jim Talent, thank you as always.
You are welcome.
You have a great week. Former Senator Jim Talent there. Great to get him on. Coming up, what can the sheriffs do to protect the Second Amendment? We'll get
dozens of Missouri sheriffs in town for one thing.
We are standing in the gap between the federal government and you.
Douglas County Sheriff Chris DeGase is the president of the newly formed Missouri Sheriff's Constitutional Firearms Alliance.
The Second Amendment is not negotiable.
DeGase tells me this group wants to ensure no one can take away Missourians' rights to own and carry firearms.
All right, that happened this week at the Missouri Capitol, and if you got to see any of the coverage of that, framed right over that guy's shoulder who was speaking was none other than Sheriff Dave Marshak from Jefferson County, and I asked him to join me this morning to talk a little bit more about it. Sheriff, how are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
You bet, man. Great to have you on. What prompted this this action by the sheriffs?
So the reality is we felt like we didn't have a strong enough voice when it came to some Second Amendment issues, believe it or not. And so one of the things that we decided to do was among elected sheriffs throughout the state, form this alliance to strengthen our position, give us a seat at the table, so to speak. You know, we always say, if you're not at the table, you might be on the menu. And when it comes to some gun laws and some of the conversations that happen behind the scenes, there's a lot of people who are attempting to infringe upon those rights. And, you know, I think with the conversations that we've had recently, when we talk about some of the mental health issues, and they won't call them red flag laws, but certainly they're intended to take action against sometimes law-abiding citizens.
Right. So what role does SAPA play in this? Is this any kind of reaction to the fact that I know from speaking to some of my friends locally who are police chiefs, they had concerns over the Second Amendment Preservation Act in its original form, and I believe even in the modified form they brought back to the legislature this year?
Yeah, look, I've seen an emergency at different times. I spoke with Ron Calzone, one of the framers of the first SAPA, as we went along.
Sheriff, wait, you're breaking up. I don't know what's happened to our connection here all of a sudden, but we're getting about every other word. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Your phone line is breaking up on me just a little bit here. Let's try it again. You were saying, is this in reaction to SAPA?
It's not a reaction to SAPA. As a matter of fact, it's going to bolster some of our positions as a result of some of the legislative work that we're going to do. So I think when it comes to the legislative part of it, we have many community partners that will advocate on our behalf. But for us, it's about having a seat at the table and pushing for things to include some truth in sentencing and the fact that we have to hold criminals accountable already.
Yeah. Were there parts of that law that you were concerned about?
Look, I think when there are specific penalties against police officers, it is certainly for a concern for our membership. But let's get back to what it's really about. And that is when you have an alliance of almost every sheriff in the state of Missouri advocating for your gun rights, it's hard to look away and not pay attention.
I was just curious if there were any sheriffs you reached out to locally here in the St. Louis area who were against this, who didn't want to take part in it.
Well, I think we know what's going on in St. Louis City, and certainly their position is probably going to be a little bit different. I think for us and our membership with the Missouri Sheriff's Association, it's almost unanimous that we need to be the voice to stand up for these rights. And the reality is that we're in the best position because we are responsible to the voters. We are not subservient to a mayor that has their own agenda. We've seen that sometimes when it came down to mask mandates in the past. You know, police chief's going to follow step in toe with a mayor. That's not really what we're here representing. We're representing the people.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought about that difference, but it is a difference. And you guys have an opportunity. You know, when I think when SAPA came around, and I hate to keep going back to that, but I think it was in reaction in large part to the Biden administration and concerns that some efforts may be made within the ATF and other organizations like that to somehow impact Second Amendment rights. And they wanted to make sure that wasn't going to happen in Missouri.
You know, I think sometimes when, Mark, as you know, when legislation starts moving a little bit faster, particularly something titled Second Amendment Preservation Act, that train gets heavy quick and it moves down the tracks even quicker every day. It's tough to stand on those tracks and slow that train down. And I think that's what's happened a couple of different times with some of the SAPA legislation, where extra things get tacked on and go beyond their meaning, and it becomes confusing for law enforcement. And this will give us a seat at the table and a voice to further represent our constituents in protecting their rights, but not going so far as to hamper our ability to do law enforcement work and keep our community safe.
Sure. Sheriff Dave Marshak with us from Jefferson County. On those mental health laws that we talked about, you hear a lot of people complain about this. I think if you look at almost every one of these mass shootings and school shootings, it gets back to, in many cases, a mental health crisis that wasn't addressed. Do you have any thoughts on how we can do that and make sure that, you know, the due process is followed?
Well, I think these are big subjects, and I think there's a lot of different possibilities. I've seen scenarios that have played out successfully with law enforcement intervention using the right tools and the right considerations for constitutional protections. Unfortunately, what happens is every time that there's an incident, the left-wing media immediately defaults to the guns. The guns are the problem. And we know that those with a brain, and we look at all these different types of crimes and situations, they all have underlying issues and root causes. So it's not so simple as to just blame the firearm. And I think that's automatically the default that everybody goes to. But the reality is we know it's a much bigger issue.
Well, some agencies have decided, and I'm talking about the city of St. Louis, that they need social workers to be on the scene of crimes and all of that. And unfortunately, as you know, in being in law enforcement for so long, you guys have had to wear all those hats for many, many years.
I hired some of the first two mental health social workers from St. Louis City to help on our crisis response unit. I'm familiar with their stories and the situations, and it's unfortunate that it went kind of the way it did, but the reality is they play an important role in mental health and crisis response, but they are not equipped and or trained to respond to these calls on their own. And if you did, after they get assaulted, you're going to put equipment on there to help protect them, and pretty soon that will morph into a regular police officer into what we're already doing, training law enforcement officers to handle crisis situations with less lethal technology when possible. That's the reality of it. I think they play an important role, but let's not overstate the obvious. They're not trained police officers.
It seems like there's some sort of a misconception that law enforcement doesn't want law-abiding citizens to have guns at all. Now, obviously, you wouldn't want the bad guys to have guns, but it seems like I hear people, particularly on the left, who say, well, you guys wouldn't support this at all. Now, obviously, this is completely what you guys are doing shows that you absolutely support the Second Amendment. Do you find that misconception, too? Do you hear that?
Well, I hear it all the time in a lot of different issues, not just the Second Amendment. I think when we talk about everything from government spending to policy, and you talk about whatever the issue is in an educated sense, and you bring up facts and circumstances and talk about history, it makes the arguments a little bit more compelling. So I don't find that just a Second Amendment issue, but I find that in my conversations with other people as well.
Sheriff, we're starting to lose your phone signal again there. We appreciate your time, and thank you for what you guys are doing to protect the Second Amendment.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, sir. Great having you on. Sheriff Dave Marshak there down in Jefferson County. I'm not sure what we had going on with the phones there, but I'm glad to see him doing it. I mean, I think it was I got the impression from a lot of local leaders in law enforcement, they were, maybe this is some sort of preemptory move to reassure people that they don't need SAPA to protect your Second Amendment rights. I think I don't think that didn't make it through the legislature this year. They tried to bring it back. I think probably they'll make another run at it next year. And some of these chiefs have told me if they would just make, tweak the language just a little bit, we'd be fine with it, but they're worried about cooperation with federal authorities. Mm-hmm. That's what it gets down to. That's what SAPA says you can't, and they want to be able to cooperate in some cases, like the stolen gun scenario I brought up the other day, where a chief said if your gun is stolen while you go to a ball game because you locked it in your car, even if you locked it up properly, it could still get stolen, and then it's used in a crime in over in East St. Louis. Technically, they claimed under the rigid SAPA law, they wouldn't have been able to report that stolen to a federal database because that would have been seen as cooperating with the feds. And the chiefs were uncomfortable with that kind of language in there. So we'll see. All right. What are we talking about on Kim and a Whim?
Well, apparently legal fees for some of these illegals who are fighting their deportation, they're astronomical. And so... wait until you hear some of the ways that these illegals are trying to pay off those legal fees. Now, I'm not going to tell you right now. You're going to have to stick around for about 3 or 4 minutes to find out.
Kim on a whim.
Now, I don't think I've ever had to hire an attorney, but I do hear that it can be very, very expensive, especially depending on the reason why you need to hire an attorney. And like, that is what a lot of these illegals are doing who are trying to fight their deportation effort. They feel like they have these astronomical bills. And, well, they've decided to, I guess you could call it, get creative in order to pay off those bills. And here's what they're doing. Hit it, Mark.
Solo fans.
What could solo fans mean? I wonder what that translates to in English. What do you think? Hold on.
Only fans. Solo fans.
Exactly.
Ah, only fans.
Yeah, these illegals are turning to OnlyFans in order to pay off their bills. There's a former model from Colombia who was, I guess there's a picture of her on her account who's, you know, smiling as she's sunbathing in southern Florida. And that was taken months ago because she's now in a detention center in Louisiana.
Oh.
But apparently, listen to this, organizers, and they're not just, by the way, going to OnlyFans. They're also starting GoFundMe accounts. This is, I guess, the best way to get people to pay off these bills. There were dozens of campaigns that have raised more than $1.8 million since Trump took office. And the majority of that came really in the last 2 months, I feel like, when things started ramping up. It says organizers, for example, raised $1.7 million in June and July on GoFundMe alone, compared to about $141,000 in April and May.
I mean, I guess I could see why you might want to try to go get an attorney. But if you're here in the country illegally, all you're going to end up doing is delaying the eventual deportation. If you have an order of deportation filed against you, your odds of getting that overturned are slim.
That'd be my guess too. The OnlyFans account says it's obviously she's not wearing much. She's wearing a bikini, and it says the blonde that shouldn't get deported. And then it has a little description and says blonde, Latina, amateur. Stills and footage from before ICE locked me up. Every sub, tip, and PPV helps me raise bond money so I can come home.
Okay.
By the way, she's married, but this is her solution.
I mean, I am Googling this only out of purely the interest of the story here.
Her husband's apparently American-born.
The blonde that shouldn't get deported, is that the
mm-hmm.
one? Okay.
That's all one right. of, I guess, many.
Blonde, Latina, amateur.
Yep.
That's what it says. Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, remember that teacher out of, where was she from? It's not Collinsville. It was a local teacher.
Yeah, she was from down near
it wasn't Collinsville,
Sullivan,
though.
Wasn't it? Down south somewhere?
I just saw some article on her the other day, and it was talking about how she's basically become a social media influencer since that whole thing. She
right.
was fired from her job. She made, I think, millions on OnlyFans and then capitalized on that, and it says she's living her best life.
The greatest thing that could happen to this lady is that at least she'll have a bunch of money in her account when she gets back to Colombia, because there's a spike, no pun intended, on these hits when they get national media coverage. This is in USA Today. So anybody who has an OnlyFans account is probably going to look her up, and she's going to get new business out of it just because of the publicity alone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure if she makes $1 million on it, that'll go a long way in Colombia. But odds are she's not staying in the United States.
Listen to some of these GoFundMe campaigns and how much they've raised. There's a California mother of two whose youngest, it says, is still in high school. She raised just over $6,700 in a week. A Vermont home builder who co-owns a business has collected close to $37,000. And that's just since June 18th. So a month, less than a month. raised close to $37,000 on GoFundMe trying to fight these deportation efforts. Oh my gosh, an Oregon vineyard manager whose expertise in grape growing is renowned, it says, according to the USA Today article.
Oh.
151,000 almost since June 14th.
Wow, I guess you might, if you throw enough money at it, maybe you could delay it for a little while.
Who's contributing to all of these accounts?
The bleeding heart left.
The blonde girl I told you about.
Yes.
She has a picture of her sitting by like a river, which is probably fake, but it says, "This is what freedom looked like before I was detained and locked up. Flowing river, silent nature, peace,
oh,
freedom."
Come on.
Yeah. I don't know. You can try. I mean, she's gonna make plenty of money at that, but my guess is she's on her way back to wherever she came from. I don't know.
Well, you're compromising. Well, I don't know if this is her value. It would be my value. You're agreeing to do that in order. You know where I stand on this. I won't go too much into it.
On the OnlyFans thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, she was clearly doing it before she got arrested, though, right?
I don't think necessarily.
Oh, I got
it. Sounds like she started the account to raise
money. I thought it was pre-existing.
I don't know for sure, but it sounds like this is a new account.
Well, she's a capitalist at least, right?
Thank you, Mark. She is an entrepreneur. You're right.
She's an entrepreneur. She's a hard worker, clearly. Looks like she's worked up a sweat in that picture
posing
I saw over
for that,
there.
Yeah, posing for that picture by the river. You're right. She probably did work up a
maybe
sweat.
Maybe we should
it was probably hot
this.
That day.
I'm just kidding. It was a joke. It was a joke. There is a new movement. I don't know if you were listening earlier. There's a new movement in America. There's a new bill that's been filed. It's bipartisan, which is a four-letter word in politics, in my opinion, that would call it the Dignity Bill. And it would let people with no criminal history who've been here at least 5 years stay in the country. They'd have to pay a $7,000 fine and pay taxes, and they wouldn't get citizenship, but they'd get a dignity card, which would allow them to stay in the country, not as citizens, but as taxpayers. How long do you think it would take before that group became the next group of dreamers? Like, zero. Where's Lindsey Graham on this one, the Gang of Eight? That'd be my question. Coming up, we'll get to Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday, and of course our friend Griff Jenkins. He's covered this illegal alien story extensively, so we'll find out where in the world Griff is. If he's back from vacation, we'll get to all that and more for you at about 8:35. Back here in just a minute.
Get more at 971talk.com.